You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us. You're listening to the Civic Media Network, Civic Media Mornings. If you're in Wausau, listening on WXCO, in Wisconsin Rapids on WFHR, or in Madison on WMDX, we are glad that you are joining us. Hopefully you're not as tired as all of us celebrating the Super Bowl yesterday. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I am tired, and I am Brian Noonan. Good to have you with us. Thanks for being here. Tell your friends. You can also get involved in the conversation, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Listen to us on the Civic Media app. You can take us anywhere you want. That would be lovely. We've got our podcasts up there. You can listen to the show. You can do all kinds of things on the Civic Media app. So download that wherever apps are given away. Or sold, I guess. They're not sold.
This one's free. Completely free. This one's free.
You don't have to buy it. You don't have to buy nothing.
No.
Just all that. Look at what we give and give
right.
and give. That's why we're here. You know, old thinking or conventional thinking used to be if you worked for the government, you were set. You'd have a good pension. Mm-hmm. You had long-term job stability because the government's not going anywhere. And you could... You know, there were always jokes about government workers maybe taking a lot longer. But if you were a government worker, you seemed set. Well, that has changed a lot. And it changed even more because the Office of Personnel Management issued another rule this weekend. And it says that career employees no longer have long-standing job protections. And they don't have the ability to file to an independent board if they get fired because they disagreed with the president. So, once again, the heavy hand of dear leader and potential authoritarianism comes into play.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because the administration says that the change will improve accountability and performance while keeping a merit-based hiring in place. So veterans will have preference and there will also be whistleblower protections. If you joined us last hour, though, we just talked about the fact that there has been a whistleblower for the NSA and that really hasn't gone anywhere or been protected other than being protected in a vault by Tulsi Gabbard. But, you know, we digress. Whatever. Now, critics warn, though, that this could be used to push employees who follow the law instead of political loyalty, weaken safeguards, and chill free speech, which I think is exactly what the goal of all of this is, right? This is not happening in a vacuum. Since Trump's second term began, the federal workforce has shrunk by more than 240,000 employees nationwide through layoffs, buyouts, and agency closures. And this is what the president had to say 2 weeks ago. Cut three, please.
We cut millions of people off the federal payroll. I don't like doing that, but the good news, I don't feel badly because they're getting private sector jobs. And they're getting sometimes twice as much money, three times as much money. They're getting factory jobs. They're getting much better jobs and much higher pay.
Wow. All right. Let me ask. Where is a factory job that's paying three times more than a government salary? You know, my resume is always ready.
I was going to say.
In this business, you always have a resume.
You do. You do. Absolutely.
You're good to go.
You know, it's interesting, though, because here's the thing. Federal, state, and local employees are public servants. They do their jobs every single day, regardless of who's in power or which party's in charge.
Right. Yeah.
These are career employees. And just like we saw at the beginning of the presidency under DOGE, this isn't about saving money. This is going to be about replacing anybody who might question the administration's decisions or their motives. That could be Democrats. It could be even the Reagan-type conservatives who understand how government is supposed to work. But if you have any sort of, if you are going to question this particular administration, they just don't want you around. You're completely useless to them because they want to push through whatever agenda it is, and they want people who strictly agree with that to be in office. Now, here's where this gets dangerous, because at some point, fingers crossed, this administration is not going to be in power. So now you're going to be left with a bunch of federal employees who only believe in what one administration does. That's not what career public servants do. That's not what they do at all. Here in Wisconsin, just in case anybody's interested, Brian, roughly 24 federal workers have left since November of 2024. Jobs have dropped from 31,300 to 28,900, leaving
2,400. You said 24 federal workers.
Oh, I'm sorry, 2,400.
Like, that's not many.
No, 2,400. I apologize.
2,400 is a huge. That's okay.
It's Monday. Still catching up.
I understand. I thought maybe you pulled a Tony Evers veto and just took off those.
I just
two
took
zeros.
Out a couple zeros. It's my combined thing. Right. No, we're good.
Okay.
But leaving remaining staff like VA workers with heavier workloads and new challenges to maintain some of the standards. Many former employees are also struggling to find work or have had to relocate. Remember all those factory jobs we just heard him talk about?
Maybe they're looking in the wrong spot, because I hear the private sector, especially factories, are very big on it. If you own a factory, please call us and list some of these jobs, because I know people are looking for work and they'd be happy to work for three times what their government salary used to be.
Right, according to the president, at least.
Right.
All of this, especially if we look at just Wisconsin, right, and the 2,400 workers, federal workers that we've lost in this state, all of this has created instability. There's reports of low morale. There's disrupted agency operations across the state and as well as the country, because, again, 240,000 across the country. And this is just a massive reshaping of the federal workforce. And it raises serious questions about the independence as well as the integrity of our career civil service, I think.
And this is not just top-level bureaucrats.
No.
Who have a direct line of reporting to the president or his administration.
Mm-hmm.
This is, as you said, rank-and-file workers who have as much right to have their own thoughts as anybody else who doesn't work for the government. But by the time they finish making all these cuts, I don't know where they think the mindset of people who are now having to work in either skeleton crewed agencies or have been let go, where are they going to be supportive of the president at this point? I doubt it. And it hurts the government. It hurts the local economies.
Yeah.
It hurts everything except a fragile ego of one man who wants nothing but fealty from anybody even associated with the government.
Yes. And
your mail carrier, I should say, is a government worker.
Yes. Well, and we've seen how the United States Postal Service, just that alone, is being reshaped and reworked for more Amazon delivery and things like that. So, yeah.
Yes, it's... Well, it all, if you take a step back and you look big picture, because we tend to focus on the big picture, but we're also so busy with all the smaller things that make up the small pixels of information that make up this big picture, that when you step back, you go, oh, it all is kind of going, it's all feeding in. It's a funnel to one ultimate goal.
Right.
And you can decide what that ultimate goal is for yourself. You don't need me to tell you it, even though I will. It's one person and one party running everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it all funnels down, and it makes sense. And that's why we always talk about you have to speak up.
Yeah, absolutely.
We all have to speak up. And it's easier. I would imagine it's easy to speak up if you're one of these 2,400 Wisconsin federal workers who have been either fired, got to the point where they retired, where you just go, listen, I've been here long enough. I can afford to retire. Or you just quit because you're fed up.
Yeah.
It's easy. It's easier to speak up then. But, you know, once the thought police are in control, which is the goal, I think.
Of course.
If you don't agree or be gone.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny because with White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt defended some of this by saying that employees who aren't performing or working on behalf of the president are not welcome to work for him at all. So that tells you exactly.
They don't work for him.
No, but anybody who works for the federal government or is involved in government whatsoever is perceived as a personal personal employee of this particular president. And what
like
I think,
and
you know, it's almost like he's trying to run Mar-a-Lago or, you know, one of his motels because he thinks that they all work specifically for him. That's not actually how any of this works. Now, if you are a federal employee or you know somebody who is and you want to chime in on this conversation this morning, we'd love to hear from you. 1-855-752-4842. That's 1-855-75-CIVIC.
Yeah, it would be interesting to hear because just what is the mindset when you're – who do you think you work for? I would imagine if I worked for, I don't know, let's say the Transportation Department.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I work for the Transportation Department. The Secretary of Transportation is my ultimate boss. I don't consider – the fact that just because I work in the you work in the government, you don't work for the government.
Right.
And in the government is whatever. That's why we hear about attorneys general who have been appointed by one administration, but they served in three administrations because they don't work for the guy. They work for the country. They work for the institution of the Justice Department. But yes, his goal is to just have people who work and say what he wants to hear.
Yes.
And we can't say that enough. I mean, I probably could. People are like, yeah, we get it. What are you going to do about it? This is what I could do about it. I can tell people
about it. We can tell people about it.
That's what I could do about it.
What I think is interesting is Trump actually tried this during his first presidency when he signed an executive order that created a similar classification that was known as Schedule F, and that was back in 2020. Then President Biden, when he became president, actually rescinded that order, and then Trump, as you can imagine, reinstated it. One of the first things he actually did when he became president was reinstate that Schedule F type rule. And I get it. When it comes to talking about the federal government, we need to make government work better. We've talked about that numerous times here on this program, and some agencies could totally use an overhaul. I will be the first to admit this.
There is waste in this government.
Yes.
There's been waste in this government since the 1700s.
Yes. But this isn't about efficiency. This is not what this administration is doing. This is about making sure people who fully support the president's agenda are in these jobs. And it is about pushing out anybody that they feel is a dissenter. That is what they're doing.
And back to Caroline Leavitt's comments, I am sure that there are performance reviews with government jobs, just like there are performance reviews with our job, with my wife's job. Everybody I know gets a performance review once a year. I would find it impossible to believe that the government also doesn't have performance reviews. So once again, a lie that, you know, that is trying to hide what is really happening.
Of course. Of course. And Len chiming in over on our text line this morning saying it's the God complex, or more accurately, the alternate, the Satan complex. I just don't think this administration cares about people. They don't care about people. They don't. Obviously, the actions that we've seen from this administration would prove that they absolutely do not care about actual people or the ramifications or how it's going to affect them. They just don't care. And that's the bottom line, I think, when it comes to what we've been seeing from the federal workers all the way up to the ICE raids. They absolutely, it's almost like they just don't have emotions for human beings. And that is scary and sad all at the same time.
This was a money-making scheme and a power grab from the start, hence the suing the IRS, which is us, for $10 billion of taxpayer money and everything else that has gone on. It's rough, but hey, listen, there's good news, because maybe you're thinking 4 years of college might be too expensive. What if I could get my bachelor's degree in 3 years? UW-Madison may be able to hook you up. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good good morning. Hope your Monday is off to a great start. You're listening to the Civic Media Network, Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
Hey, good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. It is Monday. If you want to get involved in the program, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I'm excited about this. If you are a parent whose child is about to head to college, or you've been saving for college, or if you're someone like our boy Aquarium inhabitant Parker, who recently graduated from college, you know how expensive college can be. And there's alternatives, of course. You could go to junior college and transfer. You could go to trade school, which is all, not cheap, but there's all different ways. But UW-Madison, the regents are thinking about a little policy change and the whole system where they could offer reduced credit or three-year bachelor degree programs.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you've gone to school, the first couple of years are all general education stuff anyway,
yes,
which most of us took in high school. And it's like, well, I took creative writing in high school. Why do I need to take it again in college and pay exorbitant fees for it? Can't we just jump into my major class? Which is part of the reason some people opt for junior college prior to going to university. So this is great. I believe it's a good way to move on, a 3-year plan instead of four.
And in case you're wondering how this would work, instead of the traditional 120 credits, these degrees would typically require just 90, which would potentially shave an entire year off of a student's time in college and significantly lower the cost. Now, right now, Mount Mary University in Milwaukee is the only 4-year school throughout the state offering this reduced credit degree after launching the program earlier this year. The UW Board of Regents reviewed the proposed policy changes on Friday without discussion, and it's expected to vote on them at a future meeting. Now, a typical full-time undergraduate course, which not a lot has changed. I went to the college in the Stone Age, but not a lot has changed. The course load is 12 to 18 credits per semester, so you'd be cutting 30 credits. That would make a major difference in both time and the tuition fees for students. I love this idea.
I do too.
I really love this idea.
And when you say reduce, people are like, oh, how much? Well, at UW-Madison, tuition and fees for 2025-26 are about $12,186 for in-state students and $44,000 for out-of-state students.
It's
wow.
Crazy.
That's a lot. So if you could cut a third of or a quarter of that out, you know, you're saving. If you're an out-of-state student, you're saving yourself about $45,000.
And let's be realistic. At the time that we live in, a lot of students are arriving on campus with college credits from AP classes or dual enrollment programs. In fact, nationwide, about 2.5 million students participated in dual enrollment during the 2022 to 2023 school year. At UW-Madison, about 7% of students from that 2022 freshman class graduated in 3 years, which was up from less than 2% just 15 years ago. The current average time to graduate is just under 4 years. And I'll be honest, I went into college. Okay, I'm an overachiever, but I went into college with...
Yes, Doogie Howser, please do explain.
Oh, no, I wasn't that smart.
But
I went in... Thank you. I went in with several AP credits. And so I started out and was able to get out of at least 4 or 5 of my gen ed classes because I went in with AP credit. Now, I also ended up taking so many classes that overlapped. I ended up graduating with double degrees and a bunch of minors because all my genres were so closely related that it just started making sense to align it like that. And I was able to do it in the 4 years' time. However, what I will say is I probably should have stayed an extra semester because I was doing so much work. But if I would have had the option at, you know, again, in the Stone Age to go in with more AP courses and to be done in 3 years, I would have done that in a heartbeat. I would have been so excited about that because let me be very honest, the only reason my school loans are paid off is because I had to forbear so often because I was a stay-at-home mom is because of of President Biden. That's the only reason my school loans got paid off. So I will forever be grateful to him for many things, right? I know I'm one of those people living free off the government. But no, it was one of the most appreciated things that has ever happened to me, honestly, because of the fact that we were paying on these every month and we had to forbear for so often because of the fact that I stayed home to raise our kids for as long as I did. So I will always be appreciative of that.
Yeah. So this is some UW-Milwaukee is saying they want to do it. Lakeshore College saying they want to do it. I would imagine if you are paying your loans now or you have paying your kids' loans, you would have liked that opportunity.
Yes.
Like Jamie said, I know I sure would have liked it. And Molly only had to go 3 years. And she had, I don't get to brag about AP credits because I thought AP was a grocery store, so I did not go. I did not take any of those classes. But Molly did it, so she went in with credits too, and you still got to go the 4 years,
right?
Like,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah, I only got out of a few AP courses, but if I could have shrunk a year off that, I would have totally loved to do it. I will say too is I think we live in a day and age where if you're a student or somebody wants to continue your education, you're actually really lucky because we have so many different options. You listed some of them between the junior colleges, the technical schools, the four-year degrees, if you want to do the traditional route or a potential three-year degree. None of this is a wrong way to get your education. And it finally feels like maybe higher education is meeting people where they are instead of forcing everyone into the same little shoebox. I can definitely appreciate that. Not everybody learns the same. Not everybody wants to spend the same amount of time in a classroom. And, you know, if you're somebody who wants to continue your education or go back for a degree, I think a three-year program is also really a great option for those folks, too.
Yeah, let's get out. Listen, it's not like we don't need the money because homes and everything else are not affordable.
No.
I know I'm not supposed to use that word.
Those factory jobs, though, Brian, they are paying three times.
Now you're talking because, yeah, that's what I hear. Private sector factory jobs, three times more than government work.
What we're told.
Listen, the economy's in trouble and ICE raids are not helping the economy in Minnesota. We're going to talk about that on the other side with Sean Fetteplace from the National
Main Street Alliance.
The National Campaign. Yeah, Main Street Alliance.
Yeah.
So there we go.
It is 7.
On the Civic Media Network. She's Jamie Martinson.
You're Brian Noonan.
I'm running over because I'm driving Parker crazy.
You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, Civic Media Mornings. Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate it. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Small business owners across Minnesota are experiencing a lot of economic harm due to Operation Metro Surge and the ongoing ICE occupation of their city. That's why we needed to find out just how bad it is for small businesses. Sean Fetteplace is the National Campaign Director for Main Street Alliance. They represent tens of thousands of small business owners nationwide and over 1,500 in Minnesota alone. Sean, thanks for taking some time today. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me here.
So let's start. For those who don't know, give us an overview of Main Street Alliance and what you guys do. I mentioned you represent all these small businesses, but what do you do for them?
Yeah, so we're an organization that really focuses on getting better policy for small businesses. So whether that's better access to healthcare, childcare, paid family medical leave, which we help pass in Minnesota. And, you know, we work to help folks engage with lawmakers, with the press, and with the public to make sure that we have an economy that works for everyone, including those Main Street businesses we all love.
So, Sean, I know you are meeting with the governor's office in Minneapolis right now. You've had some of these ongoing conversations. And as of right now, Minneapolis officials say that city businesses are losing right around $20 million a week, potentially more than $100 million already because of these ICE raids. So from your perspective and from the perspective of Main Street Alliance, is this current level of support anywhere close to matching the scale of the damage that we're currently seeing?
No. So first off, you know, most estimates, there's community development financial institutions, and the city of Minneapolis have done a lot of analysis, and it's in the hundreds of millions of dollars in economic damage so far. Clearly, the murders of Alex Preddy and Renee Good and others in the violations of civil rights and human rights is the main thing. I'll just note that Alex was killed immediately on the doorsteps of a member of business of ours, Glamdoll, in the East Street neighborhood. And, you know, there needs to be a couple of things happening. First is philanthropy needs to come in big, and they need to come in big quick. They need to figure out ways to get cash assistance directly to businesses so that they can make payroll and that they can pay rent, because otherwise there's going to be a huge amount of people losing their jobs. We've heard that the economic downturn from this is worse than COVID for a lot of them. And the feds are not coming in because they're the ones causing this problem in the first place. And so there's going to be a need for the city, for the state, to really come in, and but that's going to take some time. The legislative session doesn't start till the 17th. So in the meantime, we're doing everything we can to help raise funds to get to folks, but we're also going to need long-term economic stabilization so that the city doesn't descend into an economic depression.
Well, I would imagine that the local government, the mayor and the governor, they're interested in helping. What are you hearing from them?
Yeah, so we've had meetings with both Mayor Frey and with Governor Walz's team. And what I would say is that they're trying to figure out right now a series of proposals that could pass the legislature. The lower house right now is evenly split, 67-67. So that will require Republican votes. Now, there are Republican lawmakers that represent parts of Hennepin County, where Minneapolis is located. And so the focus is going to be on them. There's still discussions ongoing. It does look like some combination of forgivable loans, kind of like PPP during COVID, the Payment Protection Program, combined with grants, could be a solution. You know, I know we have had discussions of, you know, packages in the range of about $100 million, which is a lot of money, but compared to the overall state budget, which is in the tens of billions, it should be achievable with some revenue raised. And maybe some of that revenue could be raised from the large corporations who haven't done jack squat about ICE, you know, ICE's presence in the state and putting out really milquetoast statements about it. But regardless, there's going to need to be that action. So they're doing everything they can. They're listening to small business owners. They're talking to the stakeholders and coming up with a plan to address it. But it's going to require a lot of work to get it across the finish line.
We're talking with Sean Fetteplace. He is the National Campaigns Director for Main Street Alliance. And Sean, if these raids continue, if the presence of ICE continues in the city of Minneapolis, what do the next few months look like for some of these Minneapolis businesses that are already obviously operating based on what we're talking about on very thin margins?
They're going to go under. You're looking at losses in excess of 80% in some cases. There's some businesses that aren't as impacted because the nature of the business and where they're located. But, you know, especially food service, restaurants, public meeting spaces. I was talking to somebody who has a meeting space in the city and just all of them are canceled. And it's not only canceled for this month, but people often, if you have an event venue space, you're booking months in advance. But those bookings aren't happening right now because people are unsure of the safety situation. So there's going to be tail end effects of this. Even if Homan, you know, came to his senses, even the president came to his senses and pulled out all the surge ICE troops now, you're still going to have people who are not going to feel safe coming into those businesses. You're still going to have folks who, because of economic loss, maybe missed their paychecks or had to get laid off. And so it's pretty dramatic. Right now, the estimates are that between $10 and $20 million a week is being lost in revenue by these businesses. And especially those businesses that are most impacted are the ones who are these immigrant businesses that, you know, they themselves, but also their staff, those corridors are being impacted the most.
And I think it's important, Sean, you can speak to this. When we talked about the protests, they were limited to a couple smaller areas across the city. But this economic hardship is crossing all the neighborhood lines. It's covering the whole city, right? And it's I've got to imagine it's moving into St. Paul as well.
Yes. And, you know, some of these areas were already struggling for, I mean, there's been whether it's the murder of George Floyd and some of the impacts of that. You know, you had Speaker Hortman assassinated. I mean, there's been a lot of political violence in Minnesota, which is deeply troubling. But yeah, I mean, this is the thing about it is that this is going to impact everyone. And, you know, if you love your local restaurant, your local bar, your local bookstore, even if you don't live in Minnesota, since a lot of your listeners are in Wisconsin, but if you, what I would say for folks who are listening to this is look up some local businesses in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, and order online, you know, buy a gift card, do something you can to support those folks. And I know that they'll greatly appreciate it in this moment.
Sean, I want to bring things back over to the border just a little bit into Wisconsin because we've heard reports of ICE raids near the Wisconsin-Minnesota border affecting really small towns. We've heard instances in Baldwin, Wisconsin, where the population is only about 4,500. So what happens to a local economy when a large share of the town's workforce suddenly just disappears or stays home out of fear?
I mean, I would say first off, I mean, it impacts all parts of the economy. It impacts the businesses operating. It also impacts the schools. I mean, people, if they're keeping their kids home, that's going to impact, you know, their education. And it also impact, it has a chilling effect as well of folks who are in these areas who are looking to invest, looking to start small businesses, but see the ongoing, you know, impacts of this and may think twice. And so, you know, I do worry. There are definitely parts of Western Wisconsin, which I won't name because I don't want to give ICE any ideas, but they, you know, there's really large pockets of, you know, folks who, some of whom are documented and some of whom are not documented, who, you know, are in these smaller towns that frankly are easier targets for ICE and others. And so I know there's been a lot of activity in Eau Claire. And even if like you have the 700 troops that were are apparently being redeployed, I'll wait to see if that actually happens or not out of Minnesota. They have to go somewhere. ICE has gotten, you know, I think it's over an excess, it's around $100 billion. I believe they got an excess funding from the Big Ugly Law. And so they have all these folks that they recruited that they gave $50,000 signing bonuses to, who need to go somewhere. So I do worry that Minneapolis, in some sense, has been a testing ground for a lot of this, and we need to remain vigilant. And that's why it's so important for the Senate to take action to demand real reforms with the way that the agency is operating and not just kicking the can down the road.
Sean Fetteplace is our guest. He's the National Campaign Director for Main Street Alliance. MainStreetAlliance.org is their website if you want to get more information about what they do for small businesses. You mentioned philanthropy a few times, Sean. In the whole scheme of thing, in the past, where has that philanthropy come from to help out causes like this? And where are you hoping, other than the big corporations in the Twin Cities that you said haven't really stepped up to the plate yet, where does that philanthropy usually come from?
I mean, some of it does come from those businesses, but not all. But there are a lot of folks, a lot of foundations nationally that are looking at ways to deploy resources. I'll just tell you one that has already happened, which is the Minneapolis Foundation has, which is headed by R.T. Ryback, who's the former mayor of the city. They've raised about $4 million, which they're working to distribute to local groups who are working with impacted businesses across the city. And there's been a lot of emergency meetings and calls to discuss process around that to make sure it's moving expeditiously. But that's, like I said, $4 million, which while is certainly helpful, is like 5% of the need at most. And so I think it's really important for national groups, and we've been in touch with a bunch of them, to come in to either support the efforts of the Minneapolis Foundation. We have our own fund that we've launched as well, the Open for Tomorrow Fund, which will be going to direct cash support for businesses. And you know, I think they're able to move quicker, and it's also not government money. And frankly, I think there will be some safeguards needed, just given the absolute, I would say, some partially legitimate concerns about fraud and issues. And there's been some court cases and some issues in Minnesota around that. But there's also just like the feeding frenzy from like Nick Shirley and these other folks that are also really stretching or lying about what's really happening there. And that's why it's even more important for philanthropy to come in, because those are private dollars.
Yeah.
And versus government, which has a role and is going to be really important, but it's just going to not move quickly enough with the proper safeguards to get the money in a timely manner.
Sean, we've got just about a minute left. I know you've been meeting with local and state level leaders in Minnesota, but is there anything, because I know these are federal raids, but is there anything they can do immediately if they want to prevent permanent closures and job losses besides the philanthropy?
Just give them business. Like, just give them business, encourage. There's actually a press conference happening in St. Paul as we speak, talking about a need to shop small to support those local businesses next week. I mean, I think that's the thing that the people who are listening to this are able to do, either in person or by ordering product online or ordering gift cards. And then as far as like what they can do now is every local elected, every mayor, every city council person, every governor should be calling their senators to demand that they, there's a list of demands that Speaker, and Leader Jeffries, maybe that's next year, Leader Jeffries and Leader Schumer demanded for substantive reforms in DHS and ICE. And so that's what needs to get done and get done right now.
Sean Fetteplace has been our guest. He's the National Campaign Director of Main Street Alliance, mainstreetalliance.org. Sean, thank you for joining us. Thanks for all the information. Have a good rest of your day.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
It's 7:52 right now. Thank you for joining us on this Monday. If you're listening in Eau Claire on 93.5 The Tap, or also in Wisconsin Rapids on WFHR, or in Oshkosh and Appleton on WISS, we hope you are having a great morning. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. This is Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. We want to know what you thought of the halftime show. There was a lot of buzz building up to it. What did you think? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Yes, Baboni took the stage yesterday. And while I did not understand 98% of the words that came out of his mouth, I loved it. He came out and it was energy from the start, Jamie.
It was
came
a
out
vibe.
And introduced himself in Spanish. But I do have the English translation. He said, "My name is Benito Antonio Martinez Ocasio, and if I'm here today at Super Bowl 60, it's because I never stopped believing in myself, and you should also believe in yourself. You're worth more than you think." And that inspiring message carried through this entire performance. I would have loved to have been one of the blades of grass in this thing. Because I was like, where'd they breed those bushes? Then I realized there were people in there scurrying around in grass.
The whole thing was so energetic. It was, even if you didn't catch a lyric, you had to have a good time. And there were so many cameos by other celebrities. Mm-hmm. Because if you didn't catch it, Cardi B was part of the dance with those dancers.
Yeah, and that little house set.
Yeah.
There were a bunch of people dancing, and yeah, they were on the porch. You had to really look cool. Cardi B was there
also supporting her boyfriend, Stefan Diggs. That didn't go well for him last night. But anyway, Jessica Alba, Carol G, Pedro Pascal, and Ooh. Young Miko was in there. Alex Earl was also in there. And then, of course, if you watch the halftime show, Lady Gaga showed up. I thought she was brilliant. She sang in English. For anybody who is offended by the fact that there was no English in this particular show, I was not one of them. And then Ricky Martin also showed up. So it was a good time. And then
Lady Gaga, I'm sorry, Lady Gaga and Bad Bunny. really looked like they were having a good time
they
together.
Did.
They were dancing and she was singing. And Ricky Martin came in and I was like, is that Ricky Martin? Oh, he has aged very well.
Oh, he has. He has.
Muy bueno.
Yes, Ricky Martin looked great. And I will say this, the wedding portion, if you watch the halftime show, that was an actual wedding. That couple had invited Bad Bunny to their wedding, and instead of going to their wedding, he brought them to the halftime show, and they got married officially during the middle of that halftime show, in the middle of that halftime performance, which I think is amazing.
It was great. We have some texts coming in. Tom in Hartford says, I like the halftime show, and Dolores in Madison said, I am so blessed to be bilingual to enjoy the halftime in both languages. Yeah, that's when I was like, man... 4 years of Latin and a year of Greek in high school did not really help me with Bad Bunny. But you could still, if you allowed yourself to say, okay, it's in Spanish. Bad Bunny is from Puerto Rico. They speak a lot of Spanish in Puerto Rico. A lot of people in America speak Spanish.
Yes.
That's, you know, talk to some of your neighbors. I'm sure they speak Spanish. But if you just let yourself be pulled into the experience, the music, if you weren't moving a little bit, I saw a funny video of John Hamm dancing on the sidelines. he's a renowned Bad Bunny fan. But, I mean, I'm sitting in the chair, and I'm, I'm trying to get Debbie to get up and do a little salsa. She would not. She wanted nothing to do with my moves, because my moves are sweet and erotic. But if you just let it wash over you, you realized what was going on. And then if you were paying a little more attention, just past the fun of the music, you're like, oh, there's a story here. I might not get it all, but I do get the power lines in Puerto
Rico.
Of
course.
I do the wedding, like you said, the symbolic gesture of handing, who a lot of people thought was actually the
Liam Ramos from
Minnesota. It was an actor, but it was symbolic of handing him the thing. There were a lot of stories, a lot of storylines running through there. It was great.
There were. And if you watched all the way to the end, you'll know that Bad Bunny spoke in English, saying God bless America, while flying the American flag alongside the flags of Puerto Rico, as well as several other Latin countries. And Jumbotrons at Levi Stadium actually lit up with "The only thing more powerful than hate is love," which I think is fantastic. And at the end, he held out that football that said, "Together we are America." About 130 million people tuned into the halftime show, which was not the disaster that the president wanted it to be. No. I will say
Can we hear a little Bad Bunny?
Yeah, let's hear a little Bad Bunny. Let's hear the end. This is cut four.
God bless America. Sea Chile, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, Bolivia, Perú, Ecuador, Brasil, Colombia, Venezuela, Guyana, Panamá, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, México, Cuba, República Dominicana, Jamaica, Haití, las Antillas, United States, Canadá, a my motherland, mi patria, Puerto Rico.
So I will tell you, as Bad Bunny fades out here,
I understood all those words.
I did. I got all those.
I understood it all.
This was
thank God for the internet, because when he held up the football, I was like, what did that say?
What did it say? It went really quickly. I did tune in to the Turning Point USA halftime show.
Thanks. You did it for all of
us. I did. I took one for the team. It was pre-recorded. There were a lot of pyrotechnics. There were a lot of flags, and there was a lot of yelling and screaming and a weird pirate cellist. So I took one for everybody. That's what he looked like anyway. That's what I'm going with. So you didn't miss much if you didn't tune in to the Turning Point USA. It went on for a half hour. There was a montage of Charlie Kirk to start and to end. And there looked like there were maybe dozens of people in the audience. And I don't say that facetiously. Dozens is probably
dozens.
What you... So about 4 to 5 million tuned in. So I think Bad Bunny, I think he captured the country in a much better way than anybody ever anticipated. I would love to see another show with Bad Bunny, honestly, after that.
I agree. It was great. Well, that's it, Jamie. We're wrapping it up. We'll be back again tomorrow to do it all again, because the news never stops and you never sleep. So, we'll come back and do it again.
We will. We will. It is 7:59. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.